Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is July 1st, 2003. Today's session is, We are the authors of our own experience. How can we embrace our divine nature as co-creators? Session 2 of State of Mind and the Nature of Wisdom, presented by Rolf Evenson, EVR 2003-02. Let's listen in.
So much for coming. I'm from Colorado, and in my other life, when I'm not at Holden, it already feels like that other life, and I've only been here for about 4 days. I work with business leaders and leaders of organizations who want to create healthy and resilient companies and organizations, and who want to find a way to lead using their inner resources by discovering their own wisdom and common sense. And what I've been talking about here yesterday and today and Wednesday and Thursday is state of mind and the nature of wisdom. And each day we'll have a slightly different focus. And I'm going to review briefly in a moment what we did yesterday to catch you guys up. Oh, what do we need to do? Roll it?
Burn it, Bob.
Oh, everybody together, we're going to say burn it, Bob. That way they'll start the recording, okay? So help me out here. 1, 2, 3.
Burn it, Bob!
Hello, my name is Rolf Evans. Let's talk for a minute about what we went over yesterday, just to catch the new folks up. We talked about state of mind, and one of the things that we thrashed around a bit was, how do you define state of mind? And I gave that some thought as I was walking down the stream, and the definition that came to me is, state of mind refers to the quality of our thinking in any moment in time. And we talked about how sometimes our moods or our state of mind are up and sometimes they're down, right? And I told a story about how I got overworked and got very grumpy, and my wife made me go on a little vacation. And I went to a friend's cabin for 4 days, and I started feeling much better after I got rested and read to my heart's content and went skiing and so on. And then when I got home, I was absolutely flabbergasted at all the work that my wife and dear children had done to improve themselves while I was gone. I thought it was so sweet of them, not only to give me this time off, but to improve themselves while I was gone. Well, obviously what changed was not them. It was my own state of mind. And what's interesting about it to me is that when our state of mind changes, the quality of our thinking changes. I just didn't know that. When I was growing up, and well into my adult years, I took all my thinking pretty much equally seriously, I think. So when I was in a good mood and I felt hopeful about life, and I felt confident in myself, and I was interested in things, and I was creative and all the rest, I took that seriously. I took that as the real me. But then at other times, I would get discouraged and sometimes downright depressed. And it seemed like life wasn't so good anymore. And I started to lose that feeling of faith in life and that hopefulness about my life and that sense of confidence. I lost my self-confidence. I would feel very insecure, and I would start worrying about whether people liked me or not, and I would start having fearful thoughts. If it got serious enough, I would start fearing for my future. I would have thoughts like, geez, you know, I thought my life was going to be good. And I thought I was a good person. I thought I was confident. I thought I was talented. I thought I had things to offer. I thought I was going to make a difference in the world. I could see that's all a joke. I'm just trying to survive here. And what's interesting about that is that I'm experiencing those different experiences about my life and experiencing that different reality. Whose life am I living? My own. I'm living the same life, but I'm having two completely different experiences of it. And no one ever told me how that was connected to the quality of my thinking. No one ever told me that when we're in a low state of mind, we suffer from stinking thinking. Nobody ever told me that. And so when I got depressed, I would not just get depressed, I'd get depressed about the fact that I was depressed. Or I would get scared by the fact that I was depressed. Or I would get angry that here it goes again. Man, I thought I had it. You know, I thought I had it. I had that experience at church, or I read that book, and I got inspired, and I thought I'd figured it out. What is this? Why am I back in the doldrums? And I would take those thoughts seriously. And I would take that experience seriously. And I would get angry. And I would start thinking, well, you know, I came out of it before. I've come out of it 100 times. I'm obviously just going to, every time I come out of it, I'm just going to go back into it. There's something fatally wrong with me. There's a fatal flaw in my personality. I think I'm going to be struggling with this my whole life. You see how that logic happens? That's why what we're going to talk about today and what we talked about yesterday is so critically important to us as human beings. Because it can help us get a handle on what we're experiencing along the journey of life. It can help us start to discern between the quality of our thinking from moment to moment. And make decisions based on common sense, which thoughts to take seriously and which thoughts not to. Our state of mind consciously, constantly ebbs and flows, doesn't it? I mean, sometimes we're just up and sometimes we're just down. And is it any surprise that God created us that way? I mean, everything in nature ebbs and flows, doesn't it? The seasons, the tides, it's all a constant ebb and flow. And if we were to just take the ebb and flow of our moods or our state of minds as a natural state of things, how much human suffering could we avoid? But I thought that every time I got depressed, I was supposed to fix it. There was something wrong with me. I was dysfunctional. And if we think that there's something that we have to do, if we think it means that there's something wrong with us, well, then we feel guilty. We feel flawed, don't we? If we think there's something that we should do about it, life gets to be a lot of hard work. Because that means every time we're discouraged, every time we're crabby, every time we're upset, every time we're thinking thoughts that we're not proud of, we've got to work our tails off to try to fix it. And that's why we have a multi-billion-dollar self-help industry in this country. A multi-billion-dollar self-help industry. And up to about the age of 35, I read most of those books. And I read spiritual books, and I went to church, and I went everywhere looking for the answers, just trying to find a way to feel better. And then I discovered the principles that we're going to talk about today. Principles that helped me begin to understand for the first time how human experience is created moment to moment. And it was like somebody opened the door to my understanding. The missing link is thought. There's a wonderful little book here that I've ordered. It's in the bookstore, so if any of you are interested, you can get it there. It's called The Missing Link, Reflections on Philosophy and Spirit by a man named Sidney Banks, a philosopher and a writer. I'm going to mention these now because yesterday I forgot to. We ran out of time at the end. There's another wonderful book. I didn't order it. I didn't think of it, but it's called The Impersonal Life. And that's been really helpful to me. Just a little book. And this Speed Trap is written by Joe Bailey, a friend of mine from Minnesota. And this is a wonderful little book. He talks about the principles in very simple and direct language in the first 10 or 12 pages of the book. And then the rest of it is stories. Stories of how these principles apply to real life situations. This is a really fun, very readable book, so I would recommend this. This is also in the bookstore over here.
What's the title?
This is called The Speed Trap, How to Avoid the Frenzy of the Fast Lane. It definitely addresses the issue of stress and how we tend to get going too fast in our lives, but it also deals with life and death and injury and illness and relationships and families and all the rest. Now, a key thing that we talked about yesterday was that not only do our moods ebb and flow, our state of mind ebb and flow, and not only is our state of mind literally the quality of our thinking in any given moment, and this is the kicker, we experience what we're thinking, what we're creating with our thinking, as real. So before my wife kicked me out of the house, 2 springs ago, I was experiencing my kids as little hellions. And I was experiencing my wife as a nag. I was really feeling angry at them all. Has anyone had that experience when you're really in a funky mood and your loved ones are just not as attractive as you would wish? Right? We literally, our experience changes. And then when I went and got renewed by my time away and my quiet time and my reading and my skiing and whatever I did, my thinking changed. And as my thinking changed, I came and walked in the door and my experience of reality was different, wasn't it? I literally experienced different reality. Now, have you ever wondered why a person could be this great guy one day and this jerk the next? This is why. One day, given his state of mind, given what he's thinking, jerk can make sense. We all do what makes sense given what we're thinking. In a healthy state of mind, our natural compassion, forgiveness, perspective, understanding comes back. We don't have to work at it. It's a gift. It's the grace of God touches us naturally when we drop all of our angry thinking and settle into our own innate health, our own natural state of being. Have you ever gone on vacation at a time when you felt burned out, frustrated, fried, you weren't yourself, you were crabby, you were cranky, and all of that, and you go on vacation and you just start feeling better? This is where I really got this. There was a time about 20 years ago when I went on vacation and I was in that state of mind. I was frustrated, I was angry, I was stressed out, and I went on vacation and I realized within a few days I was just settling into the state of grace. I remember swinging in the hammock at Leech Lake in Minnesota at our family cabin, and the sound of my kids' voices was floating up through the trees from the dock. And my mother, who was still alive at the time, was making lunch in the cabin. And I was just spending hours in the hammock reading a novel or sleeping, whichever seemed better at the time. And I just noticed that as I was lying there, and I remember just watching the trees and the sky, and I just entered into this state of being that was so peaceful. And all the things that I had been stressing out about and concerned about and fretting over just literally dropped away. And I noticed that I had not read a single self-help book. I had not gone to church. I had not been praying. I had not been meditating. I had not been doing any work to get this. This was literally grace. It's our innate, natural state of being. And I just got it. I just got it. I don't have to work at this. This is natural. This is a gift. We have this when we just give ourselves a chance to let that natural health emerge. Drop our busyness and drop our frenetic thinking. So state of mind is huge. The quality of our thinking changes as our state of mind changes. Our state of mind changes regardless of what we do. I mean, it will change no matter what because we're designed for it to change. Our state of mind ebbs and flows like the weather. And there's nothing that we have to do fix it when it does. We will just give it some time and trust our common sense to tell us what we need to do next. Our healthy state of mind will come back. And what we think and whatever our state of mind is, that's what we experience as real. So I think that's in a nutshell, I think that's what we did yesterday. Does anyone that was there yesterday, am I forgetting something? One other piece that came up yesterday was that people were asking questions like, well, I'd like to talk about how this applies to the classroom and how it applies to raising kids. And the fact that they can get all wrapped up in their thinking and in their thought storms. And how does it apply to relationships? And those are going to be rich conversations. And I think that the logical place to put those would be tomorrow night, because the topic for tomorrow is how to deal with difficult people. What I should have added is including ourselves, but I didn't think of that. So I think that dealing with kids, dealing with relationships, dealing with groups of people, you know, congregations, classrooms, and all that, I think tomorrow will be a great time to do that. Today we're going to focus on living life as co-creators. So if any of you were the people that asked those questions, I hope that that you can wait till tomorrow. Today we're going to ask the question, how can we stop seeing life as a series of problems to be solved, an endless sea of responsibilities, and start seeing it for what it really is, an endless opportunity for creation? So if we were to spend the next hour talking about that, would that be of interest to everyone? Is anyone feeling like, my gosh, I walked into the wrong place, I wish I could leave, but I don't want to offend Rolf? Because if you do, you're welcome to leave, and I promise I won't be offended. One of the things, I work primarily with business groups, and one of the things I tell them in my seminars, we do 2 days of this together, we call them retreats, and one of the first things I say is that I tell them not to take my word for any of this. Simply listen for what resonates with your common sense. If it makes sense to you based on your experience in life, then it might be useful to you. Anything else that comes out of my mouth or anyone else's, just throw it away. The other thing is if you find yourself feeling sleepy, feel free to take a nap. One of the beautiful things that happens as we relax, one of the first things that happens is that our natural wisdom starts emerging, our natural common sense that's built into all of us. And if we're tired, what's the first thing that common sense comes up with? Gee, I wish I could take a nap. So I'm telling the truth. I have actually had people in business seminars take naps right in the seminar. And I've just suggested that they go lie on the couch, and if they start snoring too much, can we kind of turn them over once in a while? Because I think that we all need to start trusting our own common sense more. We drive ourselves so hard in life. One of the things we're going to talk about Thursday night is how to take our Holden state of mind home with us. And you're going to find things in these sessions. I hope you're going to have insights that will help you see a way of doing that. And it begins with recognizing the role that our thinking plays in our experience. I'd like to share a little diagram that I put up here yesterday. Another way of talking about what we've been saying, what I've been saying, is that our thinking leads to feeling. Yesterday we played a little game where I had everybody get angry, but I said, you can't think an angry thought. And they all flunked. So try that sometime. Pick a feeling and try to feel it without thinking about it. We'll talk more about this as we go along, so don't worry if that doesn't make sense yet. Thought leads to feeling. And our feelings create our state of mind. In the moment. And if our thinking changes, our feelings change, our state of mind changes. Have you ever been having a tough day and you're kind of feeling sorry for yourself, and then something happens, you run into a friend, and you just have a great conversation, and boom, you're out of it. It's like, where did that depressing day go? It's just completely gone. Our state of mind leads to what we do, our actions. And our actions lead to results. OK? Okay? So results can be anything from a healthy congregation or a healthy business or profitable business, or it could be a healthy relationship or a family, a parent-child relationship that's working well. You can divine results any way, but our thinking, this thought path, leads to it. I'll tell a quick story, and then I'm going to go right into the principles that lie at the heart of this whole week. Lori works at a high-tech company, and I am self-employed and work out of the home, so I end up being the one that often shops for the groceries and gets dinner on the table, and I'm at home when the kids come home from school. And one day, I had made dinner, and it got to be 6 o'clock, and then 6:15, and then 6:30, and Lori wasn't home from work yet. And as the minutes ticked by, I was getting more and more ticked. And first I noticed it, but I thought, oh, you know, it's just a thought. I don't have to take it seriously. And then as the minutes went by, I started to get upset. I didn't tell anyone. But I started thinking, where is she? Where's the respect? Where's the appreciation for the fact that I get dinner on the table night after night? You know, and she's been coming home 6:15, 6:20, and I've got in my head that, you know, dinner's at 6. Lori, be quiet.
Am I approved of this story? I remember this being, you didn't come.
That's great. Meet my wife, Lori. Well, then it was 6:30, and then it was 6:45, and I finally, that was it. I just said, that's it, we're eating. I don't know where that mother of yours is, but I am angry. And Aaron looked at me like, are you joking? I said, no, I'm not joking. As a matter of fact, I am really upset, and I'll tell you why. And I went into this whole litany of how she was not respecting us, not, you know, it would be nice if we could have dinner together once in a while, you know. Where's the family going to in this world? And I mean, you just get going like that, right? My daughter looked at me and she said, Dad, she's going out with her friends tonight. She told us all that this morning. And I thought, oh yeah. Oh yeah, I was really happy that she could go out with her friends and have a good time, and that she was taking this time off, and I was really glad to do it for her. And I don't know what happened to that feeling. And you see, what's so interesting about that is that that whole thing got made up, didn't it? I mean, nothing changed. My feelings went from anger and frustration and indignation to embarrassment and laughter and appreciation for the fact that my wife was taking some time off and spending it with her friends and going out for dinner. And like, wow, that's really cool. I'm so glad she's doing that. I support that. You see how my experience changed totally. And not only that, but when I was in that anger, it's a whole biological thing, isn't it? The adrenaline's pumping, the acid's pouring into my stomach, you know, my blood pressure's going up. They've done studies on this. You take a reading of a heart, I forget what the register is, but if you take the electromagnetic reading of the heart, anger looks like this, like that. And all they did to create that was that they just asked people to think about a time when they were angry for 5 minutes. Wow. You know, they didn't have to be in it. They just had to think about it. Just think about a time when you were angry for 5 minutes, and that's what your heart looks like. okay? And then they ask people to think about a time when they felt compassion for 5 minutes. And this is what their heart looked like. Now you tell me which is our natural state. You tell me which is more sustainable. Which one is good for the long haul? Which one feels better? This is a nicer place to live, isn't it? Now, I'm not saying that this is not natural. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that it's not natural to feel angry. But what I'm saying is that we are designed with this natural state of health, this innate health, that is never more than an insight away. An insight is like the realization that, oh, she's not coming home late to make me angry. She's out doing what she should be, having a night off with her friends. And that changed the experience for me. So what comes before thought?
Imagination.
That's a good one, imagination. Imagination is truly creative thought, isn't it? It's inspired thought. So where does inspiration come from?
Situation.
Sometimes a situation will trigger a new way of seeing something. We'll have an insight about it. Let me stop there for a moment. I'd like to check in with you and see if this is making sense so far. Is this thought path of thought, feelings, state of mind, how our state of mind changes naturally, how the quality of our thinking changes with our state of mind, how that affects what we decide to do, and how that affects the results that we get in our personal life or our business life. Is this making sense to you? Or do you have questions?
I've discovered that sometimes a thought of something I should do, but I don't feel like. I read this someplace and I liked it and I remembered it. That I really needed to write a letter to Aunt Mary or something. And I didn't feel like writing a letter. But sometimes if you take action, even if you don't feel like it, then the action follows. The feeling can follow the action. You can sometimes think of something, start doing it, and then it makes you feel good.
Yeah, I remember reading things years ago that talked about acting your way into a new way of thinking, or acting your way into a new way of feeling. I think sometimes we don't feel like going to work, for example. That happened to me once. You know, and sometimes if we just do it, things will start happening and our perspective will change.
I think what you mentioned is like the feedback loop. So you really weren't interested in writing to Aunt Mary, but you did it anyway. And so the result was this letter. And then that kind of fed back into the thought. So sort of this feedback loop happens from any one of those, I think, state of mind, actions, results, they feed back into thought because now you're experiencing some new thoughts like, hey, I got that done. She's really going to like that letter. I'm really glad I did that. And then that creates a great feeling, and then the state of mind is healthier and so on. And I think that feedback, we're constantly in a feedback loop with this whole pattern here, this thought path.
I think what I would suggest is that at some point, if we could know, sometimes it's unconscious, so it's hard to know what our thoughts are doing. But at some point, if our experience changes, our thinking changes, whether we're aware of it or not. I mean, don't take my word for it, just look at your own experience. And if as your experience changes, your feeling changes in life or in situations, or if something happens, somebody says something that offends you, and you feel that tight feeling in your gut, you're upset, just notice what you're thinking. And my experience is that you'll start seeing a direct connection.
I would add two things to your diagram, just a broad macro trigger in front of thought. Then I'd almost put a two-way arrow, because results can then change actions, go backwards to change the mind, to change the feelings, which change the whole thought pattern. And it may not necessarily be that cleanly linear, but it loops. I think that's what Lori was talking about. It loops. And, you know, results can loop back to feelings to start that whole process over again. Mm-hmm.
Positive. Creates more positive.
Yeah. My wife has a wonderful phrase, and she communicates it to me periodically. Act the way you want to feel. And you mentioned that, kind of. And, whoa, okay. Well, it does have an impact. Not universal.
Good. Any other comments or questions before we move on?
In your story, let's suppose that Lori actually was offensive that night, and there wasn't something that totally changed.
Right.
For whatever reason, she was late. Are you saying that you could be aware of how you're building up this big storm in your mind and decide not to do that? Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's a good question, but it's kind of hard to answer, so could we just ignore that? Exactly. Sometimes, you know, I mean, obviously I told the story because it had that ending. So what do you do in a situation where she is coming home at 7 o'clock at night and she didn't call and she just got wrapped up in work and says, I'm really sorry, but I had a million things to do and I just couldn't get out of the office until now.
And I left my cell phone at home.
Yeah.
I once knew a cognitive therapist who actually, cognitive therapists believe that you can actually say stop. You know, there are certain red flags, certain thought patterns and red flags that you can actually say, like should. As soon as you start saying should to yourself, you should raise red flags and say stop and go off on another direction. And they actually believe that you have the power, you know, to stop going in one direction and then head that way. And I don't know, I've been, you know, wrestling with that one. And sometimes it does work. And you can actually... But that takes a lot of willpower.
Now, the reason I think that situation perplexes us is because we imagine being in the anger. And what do you do when you're in the anger? How do you address it? And that's tough. Because when we're angry, that's a sign of, what does that tell us about our state of mind? Is it higher, is it a healthy state of mind, or are we in an unhealthy state of mind? We're in an unhealthy state of mind. And then we talked yesterday about how when we're in an unhealthy state of mind, our emotional IQ is zilch, right? And we tend not to be in touch with wisdom. We tend not to be in touch with common sense. We tend to lose our perspective. We tend to be selfish. We tend to get insecure. We tend to be self-righteous, indignant.
Start feeling like a martyr and it feels sort of delicious.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so is that a good state of mind to try to solve, to get through this relationship situation? It isn't, is it? And see, that's the beautiful thing that we have built into us, is that we have this thing we call feelings. And there's this wonderfully simple way to make use of feelings like that. Feelings are a simple but sure way for us to know what state of mind we're in at any given moment. And it doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to be 5 or 6 levels of state of mind. It doesn't matter. We're either in a healthy state of mind or we're not. And if we're feeling angry or upset, we know for a fact that we're not.
Yes,
and so
but,
the go ahead.
But there are times when anger is truly appropriate and is the healthy thing to do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if our kids are at risk, you know, or somebody's threatening us, or there's injustice occurring, then I think anger can be appropriate. But if you look at that anger more deeply, what you'll see is that there's wisdom behind it.
Right. That's right.
Can I answer this question about what you might have done in that moment?
Sure.
I think when Rolf and I first sort of saw this whole thing acting to our benefit was about, we had just been married, and we were about to take a trip. And we had gotten some, we had learned about these principles, but we didn't really know how to talk about it. And so at this point, it was pretty quiet, but we were very aware of it. And so we were about to take a trip on Friday, so I had just busted my buns to get out of the office at 4 o'clock. And to get home, I was packed, I was ready to go. And I walk in the door, and Rolf says, well, now I need to call a few people and let them know I'm going out of town. I said, it's 4 o'clock. What do you mean you're about to call some people? We need to hit the road. And so, you know, obviously the anger, the frustration, all of this was just rising. And I was just about to pop the gasket that he now needed to call. Rolf is different than I am in that he needs to make a lot of connections with people. I'm just, hey, I'm ready to blow town. I don't need to tell anybody where I'm going. Let's just go. So, he said, well, I never even got to eat lunch today because I did this and that. I said, well, I never ate lunch either because I was trying to get home at 4 o'clock. So, you know, we are just like, and he said, well, go to Burger King and get us something to eat. By the time you get back, I'll be ready. I'm like, all right, I'll do that. So I, you know, slam the door, get in the car, drive to Burger King, buy all the stuff. And by the time I got back, there was Rolf, and he's sitting outside. He's got his suitcases packed, and he's there. He gets in the passenger side, and we just sit there.
And I'm still angry.
I said, are you mad at me? And he said, yes. And we sat there for like another minute, and I said, are you done being mad at me? And he went, yes. And I said, well, great, let's go. And we had the nicest trip. Remember, we went up to Denver and we saw my sisters and stuff? We had the nicest time. And we just dropped it in a flash. So here's the answer to your question about, you know, what the heck did he do if I had walked in? Because there are many times it is almost impossible for me to get out of work, and we've always had this agreement, I would call at 6. We have learned not to talk to each other when we're really angry, because it's a really unconstructive time to solve problems. And there are nights we go to bed mad. It's okay to go to bed mad sometimes, because that's not the time to say, to get into the anger, because that's all we would be doing is just getting into the anger. And you can't solve the problem in the state that it was created. So we've learned over the years to just, we split from each other. I mean, it's like Rolf's story about going to the cabin and stuff. We kind of learn to get away from each other. And then we come back and talk about it. And it's not that we don't ever deal with problems, we do. We constantly are dealing with our relationship, the kids, all that stuff. But it's in a different state of mind than in that angry state of mind or that frustrated state of mind. And sure, sometimes we say, you know, I mean, my thing is, you haven't mowed the lawn. You know, and I really want to get into, let's talk about mowing the lawn. We've lost the kids 3 times this week because the grass is so long. And that's not the time to talk about the regularity of mowing the lawn. Because the only thing that's going to happen at that point is you're just going to recoil from the anger. You're just, you know, whoever's sort of, you know, lobbing that those angry coals at you, you know, who's going to hang on to that? You're, woo, get out of here. You know, I don't want to deal with this. This is nuts. So Rolf and I have learned how to, so if I'd walked in that night at 7 o'clock, we probably wouldn't have talked about it. But he would have let me know the next day that, you know, you didn't follow through. That was disrespectful. I would have apologized and, you know, really made, and you know, we always talk about it in a much clearer state of mind.
Albert Einstein, Lori was mentioning a part of a quote from Albert Einstein, which is so great. It was something like, we can't solve any problem from the same level of consciousness with which it was created. And I think that applies directly to these situations that we're talking about here. That when we're in a low level of consciousness, we can create huge messes in relationships, right? And the more, it seems like the more we talk about it, the worse it gets. And the reason is because in that low level consciousness, the quality of our thinking is horrible. You know, we can just come up with all kinds of reasons to be angry at each other when we're in that quality of state of mind. So the first step is to just notice the feeling, and if the feeling is off, do whatever makes sense to come back to a nicer feeling. And all that means is to a nicer state of mind, which means a healthier state of mind. And now we can draw on wisdom that goes beyond our knowledge and our experience. We can draw on the Christ consciousness within. We can draw on intuition. We can draw on inklings. We can draw on that quiet inner voice that speaks with so much more wisdom than anything that we know or have read. But we can't access that unless we're quiet, unless we drop this frantic, busy-mindedness that we tend to live with. We cut ourselves off from our own roots when we get that busy. Is this making sense?
Mm-hmm. Something that I read years ago when my kids were little that has been very helpful for working with little kids and also helpful for working with husbands. And it, I didn't know how and why, like you are explaining it, but it fits. The example would be when your child comes home from school so angry because the teacher made him stay after school because the teacher is so unfair and it's, you know, ranting and raving. And as a good mother, you just absolutely do nothing but listen and say, give sympathy. Even though in your heart and in your head you have a pretty good clue that the kid did something wrong, but you don't say that. This is also true if a husband comes home who is ranting and raving about something terrible that happened, and you just listen. You don't bring up any suggestions about maybe something else that could have been done. And then the state of mind changes, and then at bedtime when the youngster's going to bed, do you think there's something you might have done differently today that would have helped? I have used that, it's from Gannat. I saw the book up in the library today when I was looking through. It's still there, I don't know if people use it. It's the development of child development. I've used that over and over, and it works.
Yeah, it's a great story. The way to get, in my experience at least, the way to get leverage in human interaction is to pay attention to state of mind. Let's talk a little bit about the principles of thought, mind, and consciousness that lie behind everything we're talking about here. first it would be helpful to talk for a moment about why principles are so helpful. Why are principles so helpful?
Well, they're tried and true and found to be good.
It's like a compass point, like a still point, a reference point that can help simplify complex situations, a single point that applies to many different circumstances. Some people see their faith that way, that it's that's your grounding point that allows you to deal with whatever comes up. Yesterday we talked about the principle of gravity and how the principle of gravity was amazing because for thousands of years people had tried to understand how the universe worked, why the planets moved the way that they did, why the tides came in and out the way that they did, why the sun set and rose the way that it did. And because they didn't understand it, they came up with thousands of theories and concepts that tried to explain it. And then Isaac Newton discovered the principle of gravity. And one principle explained all that stuff. Suddenly it all made sense. Suddenly all that complexity became simple. Suddenly what was confusing and mysterious and sometimes scary became understandable and straightforward and logical. Does that make sense? So what we're looking for here is principles that help explain human experience in the same way. And if we could find principles that could do that, wouldn't that be great? We wouldn't need thousands of theories and thousands of books to help us understand human beings, human experience, human interaction. If these principles were true, we could actually trust them to show us the way in any human situation. That's how I experience these principles, and I'd love to share them with you. The principles are thought, mind, and consciousness. Let's start with thought. Now we're talking in psychological terms here, okay? Thought is the human capacity to create. Everything that's been created by human beings on this planet started with thought. And every human experience that's been had by human beings started with thought. And we've given several examples already today about how when our thinking changes, our experience changes, whether the circumstances have changed or not. Thought is the capacity to create. And what's most important is not what we think, it's that we think. We are all thinking all the time. But most of the time we're unaware of it. And we're unaware of how we are creating with our thinking. Now the second principle is the principle of consciousness. Some people call it awareness. And consciousness is simply the capacity to experience what we think is real. We've already referred to all of this. We not only think depressing thoughts, we experience life as depressing. We not only think angry thoughts, we get angry. We experience anger with our bodies and our biochemistry. So we not only have the ability, the capacity to create our experience via our thinking, but we experience it as real because of the principle of consciousness. And in psychological terms, what comes before thought is mind. And mind is simply the source, the origin, the spiritual energy at the source of the universe. Now, as Christians, we simply call it God. In business settings, we can't always do that. But there, we all know that there is an infinite creative source behind all of creation. And if you talk to physicists, they will tell you that if you analyze physics deep enough, eventually you get the pure energy. That there's this indefinable pure energy at the source of the universe. And if you talk to the people in the medical field, they will also talk about, they will just tell you how the body works up to a point, and then eventually they have to just throw up their hands and say, well, it's the spirit of life. You look at two bodies perfectly working order on the floor, and if one's dead and one's alive, there's a significant difference between those two bodies. One's a cadaver. And the difference is the breath of life, the spirit of life, life itself, the mystery of life. So in terms of our psychological functioning, mind is simply referring to that unknowable, that source of everything. And in terms of our psychological experience, you can just call all of this the essence of life. In terms of our psychological experience. And some people use a camera as a metaphor for understanding how this works. So if you've got a camera here with the film going through like this, mind would be like the energy source. If you don't have energy, it doesn't work. And thought would be like the film that you put in the camera. And consciousness would be like the light bulb that shines through the film and shines the film on the screen. Consciousness is the power that illuminates what we think into our experience. So if we don't like the movie that we're seeing, if we don't like the experience that we're seeing in life, if we don't like what we're getting in life, what do we, in this model, what do we change? If you don't like the movie that you're seeing, what can you change in order to see a different movie?
The film
is thought. Now mind and consciousness are totally neutral. They will illuminate and make real whatever we think.
Consciousness change the film? Mm-hmm.
In this understanding, consciousness simply illuminates the film. And if you want a different experience, you simply change thought. Now, what's interesting relative to creativity in this whole process is that as human beings, we've been creating every bit of our experience moment to moment from the moment we were born. We can't not create. We've been creating our experience every moment since we were born. So the thought that we're not creative doesn't make sense. Now, what's interesting about this is that we all can fall into habits of thought and we tend to live there. And we tend to think that that's our world. And we experience that world as real. It was interesting in the session that Paul Rohde was giving this morning about churches that were struggling. If you think about this understanding relative to situations that he was talking about, for example, a church has been gone through a traumatic experience, and they were trying to work out how to find their way through this traumatic experience, and half the congregation wanted to talk about it and find healing through talking about it, and the other half of the congregation wanted nothing to do with talking about it. Talking about it was the last thing they wanted to do. And so they were stuck. Now, if you see that in terms of all those people are thinking what they think, and they're in their habits of thought, and they're creating that reality, they're living it, they're not just disagreeing, they're experiencing two separate realities. And so the ones are saying, we should talk about this, we have to talk about this, it's the only way that we'll get it out on the table and get to a resolution about it, are saying exactly what makes sense to them. And the ones who are over here saying, there's no way I'm going to talk about this, don't even bring it up, if you force me to talk about it, I'm leaving the church. And that makes perfect sense to them. And there's no good and bad in it. All they're doing is using principles of thought, mind, and consciousness to create their experience moment to moment and saying what makes sense to them given what they're thinking. Now, can you see how this can start to help you see other people's perspective and understand how people can see things so differently? It's not because they're dumb. It's not because they're mean. It's just because they're seeing it differently. They're living in a different world than you are at this moment. Is this making sense? Do you have any questions?
Is this why there are Republicans and Democrats?
Exactly. Exactly. You know, one way of looking at it is these are thought systems. You know, I think a certain thing and I create experience in the moment, but you get people together and you create thought systems. And the American way is a thought system. Being a Lutheran is a thought system. Being an Arab in Israel is a thought, you know, there's a thought system around that. And if you start seeing the Israeli-Arab conflict, for example, as two warring thought systems, it starts to make sense. You start to realize that they've been living with these thought systems for thousands of years. And they've been passing them on by remembering them and telling the story over and over and over again. And because thought, mind, and consciousness work so powerfully, when we bring things that happened in the past to mind, we experience them as real all over again. And so the Arabs and the Israelis have this whole bag full of experiences that they've been hurt by and offended by and injured by and angry about. And they keep bringing them to mind, and it continues to be real. Does that make sense? And what makes it so hard is that they're not just seeing it differently, they're living it differently. They're experiencing the reality differently. And the only way that they can find a solution is by finding a pine tree to climb, a higher perspective. Somebody has to have an insight. They have to move to a higher state of mind where they can see it in a new way, where they can get to the point where they can say, I see why we felt the way we did. And now, for the first time, I see why you felt the way you do. Let's try to find a solution based on common sense.
I'm kind of stuck with this idea of consciousness not changing, because it seems to me that when we would find a higher ground, a higher perspective, that would be like a different lens, a higher lens to through which to examine the same thought. And so I don't know, I guess it might just be for that camera or the projector model, but
I'm using consciousness differently here, and I can see.
Is that the difference?
Yeah, I'm not.
Okay.
Yeah, sometimes people use consciousness as a way of talking about state of mind.
Okay.
And I'm not. And you're right. If you go to a higher state of mind, you definitely see things very differently. But I'm just using it as this innate power that we have to illuminate what we think and experience it as real. One of the reasons why I think that this is so gives so much hope for any human being is that when we can realize that the pain we've been suffering is based on our thinking, and we realize that our thinking can change, we start to become free psychologically. For example, when I was 6, we were on vacation in northern Minnesota. And my father took my brother and I was 6 and he was 4, to the store to get some groceries. And on the way back, we were in the thick woods in northern Minnesota, and on the way back, our car was hit by a freight train. There, it was a crossing that right out of the woods, and he had gotten in the habit of not stopping because nobody stopped at that crossing. What he didn't know is that the locals knew that the train came at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoon. So they didn't stop except at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoon. And he had just picked up the habit of not stopping. He didn't know that it came at 1 o'clock on Friday afternoon. And I saw the train hit the car full blast. And my father was killed. And my brother and I were okay, but we had nightmares for years remembering this accident and remembering our father die in front of our eyes. And I had people trying to help me through the years by healing the memories, and they would tell me things like, of course, you're still troubled by this years later. Anybody that has a traumatic experience that serious is going to be affected for many years, possibly a lifetime. And so I took that to heart, and I started believing that I was going to be wounded by this for the rest of my life, and I continued having nightmares about it until all the way through grade school. And I got some counseling about it in high school, and then when I was in my 20s, I got some therapy around it. And I remember at times they had us pounding the floor with patakas to try to get the anger out, and I was expressing my anger at God. And the whole effort to help me through this was extremely well-intentioned. But it was all supporting the idea that anyone who's gone through something that awful is going to be struggling with it probably for the rest of your life. And so I did. And I would think about it, and it would remind me of how serious it was, and I would get sad, and I would get depressed. And I would think about how nice it would have been to have a dad, and I would see somebody with a dad, and so on, and it was just really tough. And then in my mid-30s, somebody told me about how thought works. Somebody told me how we create our experience with our thinking. I'd never heard that before. And I realized for the first time, my gosh, I've been doing this to myself all these years. I had no idea. I've been bringing this painful memory to mind, taking that memory seriously, blowing oxygen and pouring some gasoline on it to blow it into life, and then re-experiencing the pain of it over and over and over again. And I realized, my gosh, these principles really work. I could do that for the rest of my life. I've already done it for 30 years. We can experience pain indefinitely if we bring it to life through our memory and take it seriously. And in a flash like that, it was over. I just realized where it was coming from, and I realized, well, that doesn't make sense. If that's how thought works, and I've been bringing that memory up and punishing myself all these years with it, that doesn't make sense. I think I'll stop. And I was free. I was free. You see how powerful it is to simply see how thought works in relation to our experience. Some of us heard Christine Carlson speak the other night. And one of the stories that she told was the story about Robben Island in South Africa, where Nelson Mandela and others were held in prison for decades. And it was a miserable place. And somewhere along the line, somebody had the idea, I don't know if it was Nelson Mandela or not, let's turn this prison into a university. What a ridiculous idea. They were in hard labor all day long. They had miserable conditions. They had no laboratories. They had no books. They had no teachers. They had no money. They had no freedom. They had nothing. But they decided to turn it into a university, and they did. And they found a way to learn from each other. They found a way to bring books in. They found a way to have teaching sessions during lunchtime in a cave. They found a way to have teaching sessions in the evenings. They found a way to have philosophical conversations while they were breaking rocks. You see how powerful an idea is. They became free even though they were still in prison. They became free because their minds were free. Because they trusted the creative power that human beings have to create what we think. And if what we're thinking is stinking thinking, that's what we get. And if we'll just trust in this natural, beautiful, God-given, innate health that we have, if we just drop the thinking that's causing our problems and quiet down. God speaks through our intuition, through our wisdom, through our common sense, and we get an inkling of where to go next. And suddenly life starts making sense and getting a lot easier. And we realize that if we're creating our very life, and if everything that exists on the planet has been created by human beings, I mean, at least in terms of families and books and universities and companies and organizations, it's all been created by human beings, and it's all started with thought. Then we are free to create whatever we choose to create. We are free to choose whatever life we want to live. And I would suggest that creativity is not just about painting or writing music, for example. We tend to have creativity blocked off in those little segments of life. But we are creating every moment we breathe. It is God's gift to us. Well, it's about time to